Welcome to Carnivores Don't Get Sunburn, hosted by Carrie Mann. Dive into the extraordinary journey of rediscovering optimal health through the carnivore diet. Here, we share powerful transformations from reversing chronic illnesses to achieving peak human potential. Each episode, we'll explore the real stories of those who've turned their lives around, embracing a diet that's as natural as the sun. Stay tuned as we uncover the science, the success stories, and the secrets to thriving on this ancestral diet. Plus, don't miss our exciting documentary highlights featuring a diverse range of carnivore champions. Ready to challenge the conventional? Let's get started.
I started developing this relationship with alcohol that was a coping mechanism for a lot of the things that I was going through. We should talk about alcohol. We should talk about gut problems. We should talk about the connection to diet and mental health. We should talk about living life and trying to cover up what you're feeling. This is running my life. You know what I mean? Like, I'm scared to go anywhere. I'm scared. Like, I have no control over what is happening in my body, and I can't eat anything without being terrified. I had felt alone for so, like, pretty much my whole life when it came to this stuff, because gut issues and IBS are just like things you don't talk about. You know, you don't really share that with people, and you just sort of suffer alone. Every time I'm in the sun, I just feel like I'm being healed on the spot. You know, it's just like, it feels good. It depends on how sick and tired you are of being sick and tired and dealing with what you're dealing with. For me, carnivore is the only way that I can live and feel like I have any kind of control over how I feel.
Hello and welcome. Carrie here from Healing Humanity, the power of a proper human diet. And today I'm thankful, grateful, blessed to welcome Nia Nova from Nia's Way to the channel. How's it going, Nia?
It's going awesome. Thanks for having me. Excited to chat today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing your full story. I've heard parts of it on other YouTube channels. I've also heard a little abbreviated version of it when you came out to the Montello Theater to share your inspiring carnivore story. And that was pretty awesome. You're in Texas, right?
Mm-hmm, Dallas, yep.
Okay, cool. We've got a meetup coming up down there. I don't know if you heard about it yet. I think Ashley's going to announce it later today. I think it's March 8th in your neck of the woods. So I will... I'll share more on that later, but yeah, interested in hearing more about your story. Maybe if you could start out, what sort of led you in this direction of eventually getting you to the carnivore diet?
Man, it's a long story, but you know, really I started having gut problems when I was a teenager. That was the first thing that I kind of realized was wrong, quote unquote, with my health. And I always had this idea in my mind that there was a natural way to go about dealing with that, or there was a natural way, like through diet or through, you know, basically the inputs that I was putting in to fix that. So I don't know where that idea necessarily came from, but I've kind of just always thought that way. Like if there's something wrong with me, if there's something that I need to fix, that I can figure out a way to do it naturally. So I started experimenting with diet really early on, in my early 20s. And I kind of went down the plant-based route first because I was, you know, doing a lot of reading and in these forums, and it's like, okay, gut problems, you need more fiber, you just need to drink more water, you need to exercise more and all that kind of stuff, eat plant-based. I got my blood type assessed and, you know, was reading that book about, you know, eat right for your blood type. It also told me that I needed to be predominantly plant-based and eat very lean animal proteins if I ate any. And so that was really the first leg that I went down, was trying to modify, you know, my lifestyle through diet, but it was all on that plant-based side. And, you know, unfortunately that didn't help me at all. It made everything pretty much worse. I started having skin issues in my 20s again, things like guttate psoriasis, which isn't the chronic like plaque psoriasis, these little spots that kind of come and go. I would get those on and off. And, you know, looking back now, I see a lot more things along the lines of mental health and mood swings and just being very, I don't know if I was technically depressed or not, but it was just, it was like this numbness, this apathy, lack of motivation, which is weird because I'm actually quite a driven person by nature. I think I'm very much entrepreneurial and vision oriented. Like I see lots of, you know, I always have ideas and things like that, but everything was just muffled. It was like there was a blanket over all the stuff that was going on in my mind about things I wanted to do and be in life. And so really that whole decade essentially of, you know, late teens to late 20s was me just trying different things, different diets, trying all different kinds of at-home DIY probiotics and fermented foods. And, you know, I started making everything from scratch and sprouting my own grains and doing like just trying to do everything I thought that was right to be healthier and exercise and all this kind of stuff. But really none of it was working. And in that time period as well, I started working in restaurants when I was really young, basically out of high school. And so I started to kind of just fall into that lifestyle too, the party lifestyle, the staying up late. Because really when you work till 2, 3, 4 in the morning, no one else is awake. So you just hang out with everybody you work with and, you know, drink a lot and all that kind of stuff. So I started developing this relationship with alcohol that was a coping mechanism for a lot of the things that I was going through. So I would be essentially afraid to eat because I wasn't sure if I was going to have, you know, sort of this IBS flare up at work where, and then I couldn't, you know, couldn't deal with that. I ended up having to go home or something like that. It was very embarrassing. And so I just became really afraid of food. And I started trying to not eat, and alcohol helped me do that. And it also numbed out a lot of pain and anxiety. I was struggling with anxiety, definitely for sure. A lot of social anxiety, being in an extroverted job, having to talk to people all day. And so it was just a lot of factors that created this perfect storm for, you know, relying on things outside of myself to regulate my emotions, the way I would feel, and how my gut behaved. And so I developed a negative relationship with alcohol. I'd say, I don't know technically what to call it, overuse or, you know, binge drinking, things like that. And then sort of this binge and restrict cycle with food, because I just couldn't seem to figure out what I could eat that would not trigger anything. So, you know, fast forward, that's about 10 years of the beginning of it. And then I started just cutting things out gradually. I sort of shifted over to this ancestral mindset. I heard about the paleo diet probably when I was about 26 or 27. And that was like a light bulb moment. I was like, this makes way more sense, you know, than trying to stuff my gut full of fiber all the time. I was taking fiber pills on top of eating all this fiber, and I'd end up in the ER thinking I was going to die because I, you know, couldn't, nothing was moving and nothing was happening, but they'd say, oh, you're fine, go home. And so it was just, you know, this crazy cycle. But so this kind of just made sense, and intuitively it made sense. And so I thought, let me just switch to that. So really that was when I started, like, I cut out all the grains, and that made a difference. And then it was just slowly this whittling away of different plant foods that I learned about, that I realized, oh, nightshades, there's an issue with these. Oh, FODMAPs, there's a big issue with these for people with gut issues. Oh, you know, this is what's wrong with starches. This is what's wrong with, you know, even sweet potatoes and nuts. And all, I just started learning, like, oh, let me cut this out, let me cut that out. And eventually I just got down to meat and realized, like, oh, nothing bad has happened. I kind of accidentally ate meat for a few days straight. It was super busy. And I was, wow, you know, nothing bad's happened. I kind of feel good. Like, what is this? At the end, there's so much stuff, so just cut me off whenever. But at that last leg before I stumbled into carnivore, I was doing at-home enemas almost every day, just to try to like limp along. And so, you know, I was having like huge salads with all the organic mixed greens and spinach and all this kind of stuff. And I think I had olives and cucumbers and bell peppers and olive oil. I was making my own dressing with vinegar and olive oil and then meat. And that was what I was down to for probably about a year before I accidentally ate meat for 3 days. And then it was like, this is different. So then I went to the internet and I started looking for like all meat diet. What is going, you know, is anybody else? What is this? Is this a thing? And then I found this blog called Zero Carb Zen, I think. And it was this woman's story about how she had basically been through a lot of the same things and was down to like only meat. And then Michaela Peterson's story popped up and I, you know, binged all of that. And I saw Jordan Peterson. This was back in 2018. Sean Baker had just been on Joe Rogan recently. And so I saw his interview and I was like, okay, this is called the carnivore diet. And it's actually, people are doing it and it's actually helping a variety of like inflammatory related conditions. And so maybe I'm onto something here. And so I was on it about 11 months. Then I got pregnant. Then I fell off the wagon and went, you know, kind of went back to, I mean, I ate a lot of meat and I was still relatively healthy, but, you know, I had meat aversion and all this kind of stuff during pregnancy. And it was a little bit of a rough time. So then after that, I've just struggled to kind of get back on it. I keep thinking, oh, I should be able to eat this. I should be able to tolerate that. You know, I should be able to have a salad or I should be able to have, you know, a cookie once in a while and it'd be okay. But it just was not okay. The alcohol came back in and I just realized again, like these things are controlling me. I am using them. I'm relying on them as crutches to regulate my personality and my energy and the person that I am. And is that the life that I want to live now that I'm a mother and now that I have somebody watching everything that I do, right? Is that the behavior that I want to model? And, you know, the answer to that is no. And so last year in it's been a year and almost a year and a half now. So July of 2023, you know, kind of ripped the Band-Aid off and started again, quit drinking cold turkey and went back to carnivore. And I've had my ups and downs. I still have some things that I'm working on, but God, you know, it's night and day, based on where I was before. And I think it can only get better from here. So that's sort of like, I guess the long end of the story. So.
No, that's really cool. It's pretty awesome that you sort of backed your way into carnivore and then you're probably like, did I just invent something? Like, this is incredible. And then you go do some more research, like, oh, other people are actually doing this. With your IBS, that was something I was diagnosed with and I heard from a lot of people. Do you feel like that's just like what they diagnose people with if they don't know, or if you're just eating too many vegetables? Because it's like crazy. I tried the low FODMAP diet. I tried all these other things and it was just like, I went carnivore and all my IBS just went away.
Yeah. I think so much of it, they just call idiopathic, you know, and they're, oh, it's irritable bowel syndrome. That's very generic. I think, you know, it's a very generic way to put it. It's like your bowel's irritated. Okay, well, by what and why? And why doesn't everyone have this all the time? If only, so, you know, like if it's a diagnosable thing, you know, like why doesn't everybody have this when they eat certain things? So I don't think doctors know. I've always tried to take the natural route. So I've really done a lot of this without official help or diagnoses from doctors, but I have been in a couple times. And basically the advice I was given both times was, oh, you're taking fiber pills, just keep taking them. And that was the advice. And I'm like, yeah, but did you listen? Like I gave them the summarized version of what I just told you. And it's like, this is running my life. You know what I mean? Like I'm scared to go anywhere. I'm scared. Like I have no control over what is happening in my body and I can't eat anything without being terrified. So like, just take the pills. Like that's not, you know, and then here's another one. Like that's not the answer I want. So I don't think, unfortunately, your general practitioner has any necessarily idea of what causes this type of stuff. You know?
Right. Do you have any theories as to why you got so sick? Like you look around and there's other people that can tolerate some of these things, but it really affected you. Is it genetics or is it something else? Or do you just not know?
I think everything has multiple variables. I think there's a genetic component to a lot of things. Like, I think we all probably have a weakest link in some system of our body due to genetics. So maybe for me, it is gut symptoms. That's the first place that dysfunction or inflammation or whatever is going to show up when I'm not living the proper lifestyle. For somebody else, it might be mental health is the first place that they're susceptible, or maybe it's joint pain for another person. So I think there's probably a genetic component to that. However, I think epigenetics rules at the end of the day. And I think that...
Quick interruption. Did you know we have an incredible membership site for you called healinghumanity.life? We have a special offer going on right now. Learn more at the link in the description. We have courses. We have expert Q&As with the good doctors. We even have a Healing Humanity Heroes Zoom call once a week, highlighting real heroes that will inspire you on a path to healing. The community is wonderful. We're going to be implementing a buddy system so you can be held accountable, recipes, all sorts of great stuff to help you on a path to healing. Learn more at the link in the description below.
And I think that lifestyle and giving our genes what they expect in terms of input from the environment as much as we can in a modern world is the answer. At least that's what I feel like right now. Not to say that we can't use other interventions from time to time, but I think stress plays a huge role. I know we hear that a lot. There's a lot of buzz about, oh, reduce your stress and mindfulness and all this kind of stuff. But really though, like we're not built. The way that we are built as human beings is not in sync with what is in our environment in the modern world, from everything from light pollution and social media and all this digital stimulation to the 5G, you know, all of the Wi-Fi signals penetrating our brains, and the clothes we wear have toxins, it's in the water, it's in the air. Like, we're just not, our schedules, all this kind of stuff. Like, we're still ancient in a way, you know, our bodies expect certain inputs. Our genes haven't changed or evolved that much in the last couple hundred years to be able to keep up with how technology has changed. And so I truly think that the reason people get sick in general, and probably the reason I got sick, was just because my gut is, you know, that's my weakest link probably in terms of genetics. And then there were enough variables that were off, that were not right. And I, you know, we could talk more about what I think all those variables are, but there were enough kind of dominoes where there was a last straw, and it's like, now you've got this issue, and now the body can't kind of deal with anything else on top of that because there's just this underlying chronic inflammation. And I think that's probably what applies to most people who are experiencing this like chronic illness.
Right. Yeah. It's so interesting what you're saying. When I first started doing carnivore, I thought, oh, this is because I'm in ketosis. Like, I'm feeling so much better. I'm not eating this. But then I started realizing it's more that I feel like I'm just doing what is most natural for humans, given the options. I think meat is the cleanest food we can eat. And then you start doing these other things like getting natural sunshine and getting outside more. But basically before doing carnivore, I was doing the opposite of everything that would be natural for humans. And it seems like we get sicker and sicker. The other thing I realized, and I wanted to chat with you about, because I think I heard you talking a little bit about this with Professor Bart Kay when you were on his channel, the gut bacteria, gut biome. I'm really starting to wonder like how much that plays into us getting sick and then healing on carnivore. It seems like so many people, like right around 3 weeks, they notice this thing like, whoa, something's going on different in my gut sort of thing. I almost wonder if it's our guts healing. I remember Professor Bart said to you, and I've heard this from others, that we know very little about gut bacteria, gut biome. It's just like we're scratching the surface of it. But I don't know if you have any thoughts on that or if you've gone down that rabbit hole at all.
Yeah, I try not to go too far down it. I always want to. And then, yeah, it's easy to get totally disoriented and lost down in that one. But I do. I think it's an area that, again, there's lots of research that's put out about the gut microbiome, but just like we know from nutrition research, you know, how valid is this stuff? How solid are those answers that this research is providing? I don't think they're that solid because, again, there's so many variables to control for. It's nearly impossible to connect or associate certain types of bacteria with chronic conditions or whatever, you know, symptoms people are suffering from. However, I think there is some sort of common sense that goes along with thinking about it, where it, you know, you could, since they're all these organisms that want to live on their own, right? They're in it to survive just like everything else. And so it would make sense that, let's say, they feed on a certain type of food, or they get used to having processed food derivatives coming into the system all the time, and that's what they like. It's that symbiotic relationship. I'm feeding them what they want, and so they stay happy. If I cut off their supply, they're going to get upset, you know, and there's probably going to be havoc for that. And I think that's what I'm still experiencing at this point, even being, you know, almost 18 months in, is that I think I have some super, well, I know I have some that are archaea that aren't even classified as bacteria. And these are kind of the type that live in these like sea vents where it's there's no oxygen and it's like extremely high temp, like they can survive all these crazy environments. And so apparently they don't want to die. So I think, you know, it'd be cool if there was more just accurate research that somebody could say, hey, here's what's in your gut for sure. And this is for sure good or bad. And this is for sure how many you need in combination and ratio with all of the other trillions of different kinds of bacteria. Like if somebody could tell me that, that would be great. And then I could just kill the bad ones and add more good ones. But I just, with all the experiments I've done, again, trying to add probiotics, different strains, I've made the SIBO yogurt at home, I've kind of done all these things and none of it's really worked for me. And so I think, you know, that just goes to show we don't know because it hasn't, right. hasn't worked for me yet. So yeah, I think, but I think the microbiome is hugely important because it does connect to the way we think and our mood. And a lot of these neurotransmitters that affect how we feel are made in the gut and the immune system's modulated in the gut. So, I mean, it makes sense to think that this is definitely playing a role in why people are feeling so much better, kind of like you said, around that three week mark. I had a similar experience. I think I published a video on like day 17 that is entitled something about like a light switch going on. And you just feel like something's different.
Right.
But I've also kind of struggled then since then with cravings and you know, on and off these weird cyclical things that happen. And I just blame it all on the microbes now. I'm like, there's just, but I'm going to win this war. You know what I mean? I don't know how yet, but
maybe it's just a matter of time. That's the tricky part. I had this woman on my channel, Malia, and some of the stuff she was saying blew my mind. But then on the flip side, it's like, we don't know how much of this is true. There's not the studies, like you said, but that was one of the things she said, because I said, this is crazy. I've interviewed so many carnivores and many, many of them say around 3 weeks, they notice this whoa moment. And she was like, I know what that is. That's one of the first stages of the bad gut bacteria dying off. But she said, we have a calendar and there's different stages. So at 3 weeks, at 2 months, at 2 years, and she was even saying, they work with people that have these really advanced autoimmune disorders and like nothing heals these people except this. It's usually carnivore and she does some other things that are a little bit different with probiotics as well. But she said some of them, it's a matter of time where it can take like 2 years to die off. And then she also said, oh, by the way, if you cheat on carnivore, like a year in or whatever, you're just basically refeeding that bad gut bacteria. And then which really pissed a lot of people off. I'm like,
it pissed me off because I was like, well, here I am starting over again because I haven't been perfect, you know.
Right.
So I'm like, great, now I'm starting over.
Right. And then you're like, how much of this is true? Is she like, is she blowing it up a little bit more? I don't know. But some of it, there's no studies for it, like you said. But some of it starts to make sense because there's science that's been done that shows like if you have antibiotics, kills a lot of the gut bacteria, good and bad. And then you realize that glyphosate, I've talked about this on my channel too much, so I'm not going to do it too much, but glyphosate is an antibiotic. If you look up the definition of glyphosate, it's an antibiotic, and it's literally everywhere. Like every time you eat a bowl of cereal, mm-hmm. your entire life. So chronically consuming low levels of antibiotics for decades and decades have to be ruining our guts. Alcohol, medications, antibiotics, it's like all these things we've taken our whole lives. I feel like anyway for me that my gut was destroyed and carnivore's healing it, but it's not completely healed. Have you tried the, I don't know if you've heard about this, Dr. Berg did a video a while ago about the L-Ruteroy yogurt. Have you done that one yet?
Yeah, that's the most recent one I did, which is, what's his name, the doctor that wrote the book?
Dr. Davis, Steve, I think, book. The Wheat Belly think,
book. Yeah, William Davis, yeah. I went to his website and like verbatim got everything that he said to get to make that specific strain and made it at home, and I couldn't tolerate any of it. I started with like a teaspoon every day when you're supposed to start with a quarter cup, I think is what most people are supposed to do. But I get, it makes it work. I get a flare up. So I can't seem to do anything. I've tried some kefir that was recommended to me and same thing happened. So I don't know. I can't seem to do any of it.
Have you done any other probiotics like kimchi or like, I guess, vegetable sauerkraut?
Yeah, in the past, when I was probably like, you'd probably classify it as keto. So I was doing, again, like a lot of mixed greens. I had cut out the FODMAPs already. So it was really like salad, meat, olive oil. I was still doing like coconut oil. And then a few things like olives and cucumbers and bell peppers, I think, which didn't bother me. But during that time I did homemade kimchi and also sauerkraut. And I can't do those either. I've tried buying them from the store, like the actual fermented ones. And anytime I try to add any little guys in there, it just, everything goes haywire. So I don't know if I'm somebody that literally has to take like a drop every, like once a week and build up, or if it's just that minute of an amount, but I feel like I start small and I give it time and space it out, and it just never seems to always make everything worse. So I've sort of given up on that and feel like, you know, the eradication starvation method is the way to go for now, at least.
Right. Well, hopefully over time it'll get better for you. Sorry, I'm interrogating you on these things. I just find it interesting people trying different things. Have you tried anything with fasting?
I used to, and this is something I'm kind of mentally working on as well, because kind of like I mentioned earlier, like that was the only thing that worked before I had kind of found the ancestral paradigm. You know, I was still eating grains and all this kind of stuff. That was the only time I felt good, is like probably 3 days into a fast. But I would, you know, I would drink to like get there, because alcohol can give you energy. And, you know, if you time it right and do it right and stay hydrated enough, like it kind of works. And so that was my relationship with fasting, was linked to another bad habit. And then it was kind of always rooted in this idea that, well, it was like a punishment thing. Like there was a bad attitude wrapped in with it. And then if I would eat, then I'd just sort of be like, well, why did you eat? You failed again. You can't do this. So then I would drink to kind of cover that up. And so it's just this kind of unhealthy pattern. And so I've just been real careful to wait till I feel like I'm ready to go into some fasting from a better view of it. And I think I'm probably there. I have tried some in the last year, and I've noticed the similar thought patterns still come up. So I'm just trying to work with that and see like, okay, can I actually fast and, do it from a place of, this is good for me and I want to do this, versus like, oh, how much do I weigh, or how much is this, or, you know, all these kind of other things that come in. Cause I do believe fasting is probably part of the answer too. It's like, if it's free and natural and been around for more than like 5,000 years, people have known about it, then it's probably the way, you know?
Right.
So I think fasting is great, and I do intermittent fasting. But I don't feel great after about 24 hours. I get really hungry, and kind of hangry. And so there again, like I, I'm still playing with it.
Right. Well, it's a good thing to experiment with. I'm with you on that. That's like my ultimate rule is this ancestrally appropriate? Is this something we've done since the start of time? And fasting fits that one. The only reason I mentioned it was, and I'm not advocating for this at all, but I read this book, a friend of mine, we filmed Lauren in the UK, and she was just raving about dry fasting, which when she told me about this, I'm like, this is insane. But then I'm like, well, throughout time, there were droughts and there were times when we couldn't eat. But she gave me this book. She told me about this book and I just devoured it. And one of the things it was talking about in here was there's certain gut bacteria, gut biome, parasites, other things that will survive like a wet fast. But when you do a dry, and there's like thousands and thousands of people have done dry fasting. Like it was a big thing in Russia. There's a bunch of doctors and case studies on it. But they used to treat it for like some crazy, crazy diseases that they couldn't fix otherwise. I did my first one, and I foolishly mentioned this on my YouTube channel, and it's like talking to people about carnivore for the first time. They're all like, you're nuts. You can't do that. What are you doing? I'm like, I'm not advocating for this. I just, something I tried, but it's crazy. So my friend Lauren, she did a 3-day dry fast. This was a couple months ago. And just like 3 days ago, she finished a 7-day dry fast with no water. And she's a big advocate for it. So anyways, if you're interested in an interesting book, it's called The Phoenix Protocol. There's some fascinating stuff in there. I thought like most people, 3 days without water, you're dead. That's not true. It's just like the carnivore. A lot of stuff we've been told is not true anymore. And so I did this 3-day fast. I did an 8-day water fast, a 5-day water fast, and I did a 3-day dry fast. The 3-day dry fast was so easy, which is crazy, because when you're not drinking water, there's like no hunger, and I wasn't thirsty. It's completely backwards and opposite of everything you would think, but there's some really interesting science behind it in terms of healing your gut. So maybe an interesting read for you.
Yeah, I've heard of that book, but I haven't read it. So this is my second ping to look into it. So I probably will. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. He worked for NASA or something. August Dunning. He's got a YouTube channel too, with some pretty cool YouTube videos on it. But again, for everyone watching, I'm not doing a challenge. Everyone go dry fast. If you're interested, read some more, because it's like something that we've been doing for thousands and thousands of years. And they did it under medical settings in Russia, and the results were just crazy, that you get into such a deeper state of ketosis as well. But the crazy thing that I'll stop rambling about this. The crazy thing that was so interesting to me was they had people doing this for 12 days. And on day like 5, 6, 7, 8, they measured everything. This is a hospital setting. They'd measure their urine output. And on day 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, more and more and more urine without drinking anything, because our body, it's called metabolic water. Your body has the ability to produce water internally, which is like crazy to me. I'm like, this, nothing makes sense anymore, but I thought that was so interesting. So
yeah, no, it is. It is.
Have you, after doing carnivore, have you gotten into more other things, I guess, outside of nutrition in terms of returning to natural, like grounding or sunshine in the eyes first thing in the morning or anything like that?
Yeah, I have. I think, like we were talking about in the beginning, there, everything is so off in terms of the environment, what signals we're getting in every day. And I think all of it matters. And so there's a lot to be said for, you know, our indoor lifestyles, the type of light that we're exposed to all the time, and looking at screens, all this kind of stuff. So I'm actually sitting on a grounding mat right now. I don't know if it, you know, technically again, does anything or not, but I feel like it makes a difference. And I keep it on my chair. So every time I'm on my computer, I'm like, maybe I'm offsetting a little bit of the, you know, whatever toxic stuff is coming on my screen. I use things like the Twilight app on my phone. I have it on my kid's tablet and, you know, my screen here. So that after sunset, it kind of fades your screen from blue to red so that you're getting much less blue light stimulation there. And really, so like little things like that, I try to do pretty often. And then sunlight, like being out in the sun, has been the other major thing that, again, just you just kind of know these things, right? It's like, this has to be good. Every time I'm in the sun, I just feel like I'm being healed on the spot. You know, it's just like, it feels good. And that's historically what's always taken care of any skin issues that I've had. Anytime I've had psoriasis pop up, I go 2-3 days in a row, maybe a week in the sun, and it goes away. That hasn't happened this time. And so that's something that I'm still, again, like trying to figure out with the bacteria. I mean, I know it's all gut related at the core, but the sun is absolutely crucial in my opinion. I think it helps regulate everything. This whole circadian light cycle is really how all of our hormones are regulated, like all of our melatonin, like when we wake up, when we go to sleep, when we get tired, and like our cortisol, all this kind of stuff is integrated into what type of light we're getting. And so I try to be especially careful after sunset and wear my orange lenses if I'm on a screen. I haven't been as good about it probably the last month or so. So I need to get back on that. But yeah, I'm just trying to find like whatever else I can do, because it's hard. You know, we still have to live life. We got jobs, we've got kids, we got to do things, and we're communicating online and doing all this stuff. Like, it's a digital technological world, but I just try to always think like, how can I mitigate this at least a little bit? How can I do it the most natural way, or limit exposure and counteract it with something else like that is more natural? So, you know, probably in the past, if you would have known me, you would have been like, yeah, this is Nia. To, you know, I was the one that wanted to just go live off the grid in a cabin in the middle of nowhere and be there all by myself and have no electricity and just like totally literally live the way people used to. But I think we have to find a way. I mean, not that you can't do that, there's nothing wrong with that, but the way I feel now more is like, I just want to try to live in the world and do the best that I can the most natural way I can, and to try to keep that in mind at all times, so that I'm, you know, I'm doing the best that I can for myself, and then modeling that for my kid too, so she can see like, hey, technology is not everything, you know, it could easily go away, it could easily not be here. And so then what's left after that? We just have these natural ways of doing, you know, meeting our needs, doing all these things. So I don't know if that answered the question.
No, absolutely. I was talking to my wife and I'm like, we got to just do like you were saying, find a cabin or something, just disconnect for like a week. It's so hard because it's just hitting you from everywhere. Can't drink water out of a plastic bottle. Even in your house, you're rebreathing the air that's coming through over and over again. There could be mold in the air. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. We interviewed Dr. Lisa Wiedemann last week for the documentary, and she's a huge proponent of natural light hitting your eyes. In fact, I bought a whole bunch of these. She came, we shared an Airbnb while we filmed her, and she's like, she's got the glasses on and she's brought all different light bulbs. She's got this light in here, and we had all the lights off, and I'm like, this is awesome. Like, it felt good. It's almost like you're under candlelight, mm-hmm. or something. It just felt right. It felt natural, kind of like staring at a campfire or something, but something I'm trying to incorporate more. But yeah, you're right. It's hard. It's hard trying to find that balance, but I think we got to do the best we can. I have people that are like, why don't you just go lay on the ground outside then and not have a bed? Why don't you just not have a house? It's like, at what point do you find the balance and stop?
Right. Yeah, so. No, it's tough. And we lived off grid for about 18 months in a school bus that we converted into an off-grid RV in like 6 weeks. So it was not these luxurious schoolies that you see on Instagram or anything. I mean, it was functional, but so I mean, I had that experience, and there were parts about it that really opened my eyes to, because you basically live a circadian life when you don't have electricity that you don't have to generate. We used solar, and then but that didn't meet all the needs, even for just the very little that I used it for. So I had to use like a generator and wood heat and all this kind of, you know, so chopping wood, hauling water, disposing of your own trash, disposing of your own gray water. What do you do with your toilet waste? You know, all right. This like
sounds glamorous.
I had a car fridge. Yeah, like our refrigerator was like, I think it's like 42 cubic inches or something. It's like one of those that you would put in your car and take on camping trips or something. Like that was my fridge to make food for all three of us for, you know, 18 months. So it's like you get real aware of like how much we consume and how much, like you get real thankful for hot right. showers on demand. And, you know, I can wash dishes and not have to worry about how much water I have to empty now and into the gray system. And like, so, but you get on that circadian clock. So like when the sun goes down, no matter what season it was, it's like, I'm done for the day. You know, like everything's packed up, everything's filled, the heater's on, like you get in bed, you read books with a headlamp, and then you go to bed, and then you wake up when the sun comes up and you go outside, and that's your first light in your eyes, you know, because you don't have any electricity. And so it's just very, like that experience taught me so much about how, what it feels like to live more in sync with nature. And so I definitely think that at least from time to time as human beings, we need to disconnect and go out into nature and not have a cell phone on all the time and, you know, just have quiet, you know, and not be stimulated and cook over a fire and do that kind of stuff too. Cause there's healing just in the hard work of living like humans used to have to live, I think.
Right. We're very close friends with an Amish family. They live about a half an hour from here. And oh my goodness, like the first time we went to hang out with them, first of all, it was almost shockingly like stunning how quiet it was just in their house. The mm-hmm. only thing you could hear is just the little fire flickering in their little wood stove. But they're some of the most joyful people I've ever met in my entire life. They're pretty darn close to natural. Unfortunately, the standard American diet's crept in for them too. They eat a lot of sugar and baked stuff, but they're getting up in the morning. They're no electricity, going with the sunshine, out working in the field and sweating and all that stuff. So it's always nice. They're kind of between my house and my dad's house, which we drive often. They're in the middle. So we stop over there often. And every time I go there, it's just like, just decompress yeah. and take a little bit of a rest. So, so Nia, what sort of advice do you have? I have a lot of new people that are just thinking about carnivore, or they had horrible IBS or anxiety or depression, but they can't wrap their brain around carnivore. What sort of advice would you give to someone like that?
Well, I think it depends on a couple things. It depends on how sick and tired you are of being sick and tired and dealing with what you're dealing with. And I think it also depends on the way you go into, the way you enter into a carnivore diet. And so I think, you know, one of the main reasons that I'm still dealing with issues is because I cut everything off cold turkey, which I think a lot of people need to do. And I think it's a good way to do it for a lot of people. But I think that just like created this like anger storm in my gut that I'm still dealing with. That's what I believe, because the first time I did it, it took me like 6 years of whittling foods back and like being bread and grain and all this starch free for like 4 or 5 years before, you know, and just doing like vegetables and meat for like 18 months, almost 2 years before I cut out the last few plants. And that experience was like what I feel like so many other people's are, where it's like 3 weeks, I was like, oh, I'm cured. I'm healed. I felt better. I had no IBS. Nothing was wrong with like, felt great, even though I was still drinking alcohol that first time. You know, and I've talked about that a lot on my channel. So people are interested in that topic. I talk a lot about it there. So I think the slow adjustment period was what my particular gut needed in order to make that transition. However, I hear stories of people, that it goes away very quickly from a standard American diet or a vegan diet or something like that, a heavy plant-based diet. So I would just say, if you're struggling with gut issues, just know that there are two different ways to kind of enter into it, and think about those ways and decide which one you're going to do. And know that if, say, you start by like the tapering in method and you cut out one food group every couple weeks or something like that, you can always change and you can always rip the Band-Aid off and go full in. However, if you go full in, it's kind of hard to go back and then go the other way. So, you know, I think in the end, it's good to just start if you're thinking about it and give it a shot, because there's a very high chance that you will be one of those people that is able to adjust quite quickly. And by quickly, I mean within like 30 to 90 days, probably you'll notice major changes. And that did happen for me too. Like I never think about going back to adding in plants on a consistent basis. Like that's not my thought ever, even though my digestion still isn't perfect. It's really that I still have cravings for like junk, and I'll have dreams. And I don't know if I watched both your interviews with Malia, but I don't remember if she touched on this or not, but I totally think, or if there's any research to back this up, but I have these crazy dreams and they come in cycles. And I think it has to do with bacteria. You know, like I had a dream the other night about drinking beer. I haven't drank beer in probably, oh gosh, at least 7 or 8 years. Like I, you know, even when I did drink, I'd never drank beer. So it was like, well, maybe that's not true. Maybe like 5 years or I don't know. It's been a long time. And so, you know, but it's like, where did that come from? And in my dream, it was like, oh, I'm doing like, this is so great. And I had one 2 weeks ago about, you know, eating junk food. And it's like, this is the microbes, you know what I mean? Like they're still in there fighting for their life, and they're doing what they're trying to get me to consume it. Right. So it's just like, you know, you may have some ups and downs. You may have some struggles. It may take longer than your average person that switches over to carnivore. However, I think trusting in our bodies is important. I think trusting in what is natural for human beings is a key component. I think carnivore is natural. I think some people can tolerate some plants, you know, and if you want to add some things back in, that's fine. But for me, carnivore is the only way that I can live and feel like I have any kind of control over how I feel. As soon as I start trying to add something back in, or I give into a craving, you know, and it's like, well, my gut's not healed anyway, so what's the use, right, of eating this way? Maybe I should just have some certain things, right? Those thoughts will come in, and then it's like, then I'll do that. And then it's like, oh yeah, that's why I do carnivore, because it gets so much worse, you know? So like, I understand how it can be hard for people to commit and kind of wrap your mind around only eating meat for potentially the rest of your life. But the benefits just continue to stack up, and they start to outweigh the things that you might miss in the beginning, or the way that you have to do social gatherings now, or holidays, or, you know, all the things in your lifestyle that change because you're getting healthier. Those things start to stack up, and then you realize, oh, this is who I am as a human. You know, you might have never even experienced who you really are once all these things start to fade away. And so, my advice is just give it a shot. You can always go back if you know, it's not like you can't ever go back. So it's just an experiment. Treat it like an experiment. And then you're worth your health is worth it. Giving it that chance to see how good you could feel, you know?
Right. Yeah, it would be such a shame for so many people that are going to go their whole lives never taking that chance and actually feeling how they could feel. I just got a thought. I have to hook you up with Malia. I don't know if you're interested in maybe having her on your channel, because some of the things you're saying, Nia, it's like she said almost exactly what you were saying. And I don't know if it was in the video, because I've talked to her a couple times outside of the video, but she was saying she almost has like this calendar of different types of gut bacteria that are dying off. And one of the things she said is when there's a major die off, you will have dreams and you will have just these intense, sudden cravings. And it's like, it sounds crazy, but she's like, there's the gut brain access. Mm-hmm. And it's like, they are doing everything to not die. And they will, she said, she's like, they do it like clinically with these people over and over again on a calendar where they can almost say like, all right, it's about to happen. You're like 3 days away and you're gonna have this big major die off. You're gonna have dreams and you're gonna have this. So it's kind of disturbing, but then on the flip side, it's kind of encouraging, like you're making progress sort of thing. But if you ever want to chat with her, just maybe personally or on your channel, I'd be happy to hook you up, because I got to do another video with her, because just every time I talk to her, I'm like, what about this? What about that? Just kind of scratching the surface.
Yeah. And it's so interesting. And yeah, I would love to, because I think there again, that's kind of all you can do in terms of research, is like look for patterns in people who are doing this. Because most of the stuff we have, again, is not done on a carnivore population. So we can't, we're trying to compare people who are eating this way, which is relatively new, let's say, in our society, to research and stuff that's based on people that are not necessarily healthy, eating a standard diet, eating a plant-based diet. So like, you can't even really compare, you know, it's hard to study things anyway from that perspective. Yeah. So yeah, if there's somebody who's actually saying, oh, we work with hundreds or thousands of people and this is the pattern, then to me, that's evidence, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll shoot you an email after this and introduce you to Malia, because that'd be pretty cool. Maybe she could answer some of these other questions. But yeah, you're absolutely right too. I know they have these things where they'll test your bacteria in your gut, and it's like, what are they comparing them to? And they're comparing them to people on a standard American diet. Like, I want to compare them to the Maasai or someone that's actually like eating properly and not poisoning themselves, sort of thing.
Right.
In terms of your YouTube channel, a question I had for you is, what motivated you to do YouTube and share your story on YouTube and now interview other people?
Yeah, I started a channel the first time that I was on carnivore, and I've always been into fitness as well. And I have a couple of, like I had just completed training as a personal trainer at that time. And so I was going to make videos about that. But I just started talking about my diet experiments, and that was right around the time when I first started carnivore. So I did like a 30-day update and a 60-day to 90-day and stuff like that. But I got really, because like back then it wasn't there, not as many people knew about it, and people were asking a lot of these types of questions, like, what about the microbiome? What do you mean? What about cholesterol? All this stuff. And I was like, I'm not a doctor. Like, I don't know how to answer these questions. And I got really just like intimidated by that. And I took a lot of stuff personally, and it was just became really stressful. And so with that, among other reasons, I ended up quitting my channel probably about right after our daughter was born. And so I didn't do it for a while. And then I thought, you know, I need to, and then I started back again when we were doing the bus, the off-grid bus. I thought, oh, let me talk about this. I mean, I've always been interested in making videos and the idea of you know, being creative and trying to help people in some way, or just sharing what I know or what I can help people with. So I was, you know, talking about the bus and all this stuff. And then when I went back to carnivore, I was like, I didn't want to switch my content over, to be honest, because I thought, like, it's just, you know, there's a lot there. And I just sort of had this imposter syndrome, like, well, I'm not an expert, I'm not a doctor. Like, what if I'm harming people by giving this information? Like, I don't know why this works. It's just working for me and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, then I just thought about the people that I had found when I was looking for answers, and how much hope that gave me to go online and be like, oh my God, there's somebody else that's only eating meat. Like that moment was like, oh, I'm not alone, you know, because I had felt alone for so, like, pretty much my whole life when it came to this stuff, because gut issues and IBS are just like things you don't talk about, you know, you don't really share that with people, and you just sort of suffer alone and nobody knows really what you're going through, even some of the people that are closest, supposed to be closest to you. And so there, I had this fear of sharing and talking about things that was very strong, but also a deep desire to share, because I know how it feels to be alone and feel like no one understands what you're going through, and feeling like there is no hope for you, and that you've tried everything and nothing works, and the doctors can't help, and all your sprouted kimchi and all this stuff you know, make at home and try to do isn't working. And so I thought, you know what, let me just share again, because I mean, if I can, if my, one of my videos is what pops up when somebody's looking on, you know, for an answer, for hope in some way, and that can help them, then I think I'm obligated to do that, you know, in a positive way. It's a positive feeling around that. Like, of course, why wouldn't I want to share what I know if it could help somebody else? And so I really had to overcome like that imposter syndrome, like, oh, I'm not an accredited person, like, why should I be talking, kind of a thing. That was a big thing to overcome. And then just the fear of being vulnerable, I think, is something that is scary when you put anything out on the internet. But I'm glad I did, because I think we should talk about it more. We should talk about alcohol. We should talk about gut problems. We should talk about the connection to diet and mental health. We should talk about, living life and trying to cover up what you're feeling, or cover up the things that you don't want to feel or talk about, with caffeine, overworking, shopping, alcohol, binging, like, all, you know, we are an addicted society, I think, in one form or another. And everybody, I think, struggles with something. And so I think we should talk about it. And I think carnivore really, it'll show you what you're addicted to. Let's put it that way. You know, it'll definitely let you know what you need to work on. And I think if a person is ready for that, if you're ready to open that door and face the parts of yourself that maybe you've been running from, or you've been hiding from for a long time, this is your ticket in, and you can really do some deep work, and you can really heal and start to heal holistically as a human if you start with your nutrition.
Good stuff. My last question for you, has your perspective on the world sort of changed? There's some people that do carnivore and they're like, I feel like I disconnected from the matrix. I see things a little bit differently now. Has that happened for you at all?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's really affected how I see a lot of things, everything from politics to just like family life to like everything. Because I think once you realize that you can be lied to like that, like you can be essentially brainwashed to believe that things are a certain way, and that this certain way is healthy, and that I must be crazy because I'm still sick and the doctor says there shouldn't be anything wrong with me, and just keep taking the pills, and that's the normal thing to do, and everyone else around me is doing that, but there's something inside of me that's like, no, that's not good enough, like I must be the crazy one, right? And you walk around thinking you're nuts. But then when you realize, oh my God, you know, like this is just all based on a house of cards, you know, all this nutrition stuff, and you follow the money and you realize the type of influence that had and the ideology that was behind a lot of this. And like, you can't unsee that stuff. And then you start to look at the world and go, what else is like this? Like what else has a big giant curtain in front of it? And there's stuff going on behind the scenes, you know? And so it really, and you got to be careful with that too, because you can kind of turn into, or a person can, and I've been down this road, so you know, I can call my own self out, not even necessarily like a conspiracy theorist, but just like it becomes very fear-based, where you get very like, oh, everyone's lying to me, and everything's, you know, it's sort of like this war on everything and nothing's safe type of a thing. So I think approaching life and new information coming in with an eye of skepticism is healthy. I think we should all do that. We should all question everything that we've been taught. Because if we never do that, we'll never know for sure if it's true. You can always question something and then realize, oh, it is true, and I do like that, and I want that in my life, or I am going to continue to operate this way. But then you know that it's a choice that you've made to accept that belief or that way of living, not just something that's been installed into you through society or upbringing or whatever. So I think a healthy level of skepticism is good. And again, once you do this and you run this experiment on yourself and you realize, oh my gosh, pretty much everything we've been taught about nutrition is wrong, and this is what's healing everybody, you're naturally going to look other places, and you're naturally just going to look at everything a little more skeptically, which when handled, I think appropriately is a good thing.
Absolutely. Good stuff. This has been great, Nia. Thank you so much. Can you shout out, like, where can people follow you? Where can people find you?
So I'm most active on YouTube. My channel is Nia's Way, and I do have an Instagram as well. And I have just recently launched a monthly challenge group. So that's on my website at niasway.com. Where we focus on diet, and it's, you know, for carnivores, people in this space. But I also offer fitness classes, functional training and yoga and things like that, primal movement based fitness. And then we have live classes every month on a different lifestyle topic. So it's personal growth and like holistic healing related. So my website and YouTube are where I'm most active.
Good stuff. And I will leave links in the description for all of those. Thank you so much, Nia. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for watching. If you're interested in learning more about our documentary, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet, or supporting it, please visit donate.healinghumanity.movie. Our goal is to reach millions of people that are hopeless right now, and sharing the examples of real people over the course of 1 year that are undertaking a proper human diet to overcome obesity, type 2 diabetes, depression, anxiety, fertility issues. We couldn't do it without you. We thank you so much. We are also selling these shirts, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet. Every penny we get from those goes towards the documentary. And last, we have memberships. If you click the little join button, it's best to do it on desktop. Under any one of my YouTube videos, you can join and become a member. We have hundreds of members right now. We do members only videos. We do members only behind the scenes. You can email me as a member and I'll answer you. And every penny from that goes to support the documentary. And the last thing is, we have these Redmond's portable salt shakers. These things are awesome. You can get the best salt. You can take it with you. We sell these on the website along with our water bottles and cutting boards, and every penny from all of those goes 100% towards supporting the documentary. You can also sign up for our newsletter, which is completely free. All of these links are in the description below. Thank you so much for your support.